Your heart. It's the only one you have. Fortunately, you also have a choice. Expert cardiologists, talented surgeons, highly skilled specialists, all of whom chose WakeMed. Why? The main reason is the same reason patients choose WakeMed. Everything you need for the best possible care is right here. Learn more at WakeMed.org. WakeMed Heart and Vascular Physicians. Your heart, your choice.
Hello and welcome to The Wrap, your weekly look at North Carolina politics from WRAL. I'm Travis Fain, one of the station's state government reporters.
And I'm Will Doran, another state government reporter.
And hoo-wee, Will, it's been a week. I tell you what, those of you who know Laura Leslie, who is often on this show, our colleague, she hit her head and got a concussion, so she's been out for this week, but she's doing much better. You should see her back around the State House next week. I know people are sending her love and would want to know that update. So Laura's doing well. She's got to take it a little easy for a while.
Yeah, we saw her the other day, and she was looking great, though. So hopefully she'll be back on her feet very soon.
So I wanted to hit that off the top. But speaking of hitting things, Beth Wood, state auditor, was in court this week. She pled guilty to, I don't even remember the charge, Will.
Hit and run,
because she ran a state-owned vehicle into another vehicle in downtown Raleigh. But that wasn't the only thing she said. She also acknowledged, for the first time that we know of publicly, that she had been drinking before the accident. I don't think that's a surprise. Will, can you guess how many glasses of wine she said she had, what the number was?
I'm going to guess that she put herself below the legal limit, probably.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the amount that every person who's ever been pulled over by a police officer after having been drinking said it was, which is two. That seems to be the universal. I only had two, officer. So she had two glasses of wine, she says. She says she was not impaired, but she did leave the scene of the accident, conveniently into a law office of her friend, Rufus Edmondson, which was right there. And unfortunately, it seems like the lesson here is kind of clear. If you're in an accident like this and you've been drinking and it's right outside your friend's law office, you should go hide in that law office so that you can not be charged with DUI. I don't see.
Yeah. I mean, she's just looking at a very small fine here, a relatively minor charge. It is, still a criminal charge, but
right.
it's minor. And it's certainly not a DUI.
A significant, obvious hit on her, character, perhaps her political future here. So I don't want to pretend like there are no consequences. Also, two other people were charged with basically obstruction, failure to give information to the officers. That's a Jonah Mendes, age 26, and a Ryan McGirt, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, 29. I don't know either of those two folks, but apparently they were with her on that evening. Gun bill vetoed today. Governor Roy Cooper vetoed Senate Bill 41. Tell us quickly what that one does.
Yes, this is it does a bunch of things, but the main thing is it repeals the state's pistol permits, which are when you want to buy a handgun, you have to go to your local sheriff and say, hey, I want to buy a handgun, and the state law requires that you check me out first. So the sheriff spends some time, and this is a big concern of conservatives. Sometimes that check can take weeks, even months.
Especially in urban areas that happen to have Democratic sheriffs.
Yes. There were actually lawsuits against the Wake County Sheriff, and I believe
maybe Mecklenburg. I'm not sure.
But definitely the Wake County Sheriff accusing him of purposefully slow walking these permits to, as essentially a soft form of gun control. And so there's just, really been this conservative reaction against that because, when you want to go buy a gun, who wants to have to wait for months and months to get this permit? However, one thing that these permits do is they apply to private gun sales, which the federal background check does not. So, Travis, if I wanted to sell you a gun or if I wanted to go to the state fairgrounds to a gun show and buy a gun there, there wouldn't necessarily have to be any sort of background check if these pistol permits do get repealed.
Yeah, if you're buying it from a private seller as opposed to a licensed firearms dealer. So the Republicans will obviously try to overturn the governor's veto here, which is where we start to get down to the math. We've talked a lot about how House Republicans are one short of a supermajority, so they only need one Democrat to go along with them to overturn vetoes. Republicans in the Senate have their supermajority. Three Democrats voted for this bill in the House. That's Representatives Lucas, Willingham, and Ray. Ray is interesting because he had co-sponsored a similar bill, another gun bill along this same lines.
A pistol permit repeal, yeah.
And then voted against his own bill. So who knows where? And now he's voting for the same idea in a different bill that he was not the co-sponsor on. So I don't know what to think of that. We talked, I think, before about how we expected the governor probably to veto this, because when you're a Democrat, nationally prominent, you make statements on guns. I don't know what will happen on the veto override. Republicans could absolutely get a Democrat to come over to their side on this or stick with them on this. Or they could, you know, pull the vote when a couple of Democrats are absent and they don't need the bigger margin.
Or, you know, like with basically everything we're going to be talking about this session, they could just, you know, let that veto happen and then just stick this in the budget.
Right. I hadn't even thought about that, but that would not surprise me. We will see, I think, the House budget on Wednesday. Medicaid is going to be signed by the governor. Medicaid expansion passed the House 87-24 on, what was it, Thursday was the final vote.
The anniversary of Obamacare becoming law.
13 years to the day. To the day.
I don't think that Speaker Moore planned that to honor Obamacare,
he told me that he did not know that it was the anniversary. But that it's fascinating. You know, Republicans spend all this time trying to kill Obamacare, running it down, end up embracing a key policy of Obamacare, and then end up approving that and sending it to the governor on the 13th anniversary. Now we wait and see what's in the budget. Because, as we've said before, Medicaid expansion doesn't actually get implemented until a new state budget passes.
Exactly. And that's why I just said, you know, that if there's a veto that the Republicans can't override, it's always possible they could just stick it in the budget. Because with Medicaid being tied to the budget, I mean, Cooper has to sign the budget. After as much political capital as he's spent over the years and as Democratic lawmakers have spent, like, you can't go and veto it now.
Right. You would think so. Tim Boyan, by the way, interviewed Speaker Tim Moore on Thursday, was told that abortion policy will not be one of those things they stick in the budget. So abortion will be separate from that, assuming everybody keeps to that, which I think is worth noting. Again, we expect the House to release its version of the budget Wednesday. It'll go through committee hearings Thursday on abortion. We still don't have a timeline for an abortion bill. Democrats, though, had an abortion bill this week that they rolled out. Was it another?
Yes, I was there. Senator Natasha Marcus and Representative Julie Van Hafen were kind of the two lead folks on that. The RBG bill, named after the late Supreme Court justice, to protect abortion rights here in North Carolina. They acknowledged that it obviously has zero chances of passing in our current Republican-controlled legislature, but said that, you know, it's important to make a statement. And, you know, they had a bunch of OBGYNs there, including one woman pretty young in her career who said that she can't morally continue living in North Carolina. And so she just took a new job in California. And she's going to move this summer because of the direction that we're heading on abortion laws.
Wow. Speaking of kind of bills that get people riled up, the CRT bill, the anti-CRT bill, this is the one that limits the way race and racism and the history of these things can be discussed in a North Carolina classroom. It cleared the House on a 69-49 party line vote. Republicans voting for it, Democrats against it. I don't know the timetable on that bill in the Senate, but it's one that the Senate has passed before and the governor has vetoed before. So we're going to get back on, stay on that merry-go-round, I guess. Seems like that's one where Democrats would hold the line together. And be able to uphold the governor's veto unless there were some absences that allowed them not to.
I think that's a good analysis, yeah.
Sports gambling. Two committees this week, right?
Three, actually.
Oh, boy.
it's moving.
It's a trifecta.
Hit the parley. No, it is moving very fast at the legislature here after really kind of an inauspicious end in the last session. You know, if people remember, it passed the Senate, you know, not without controversy, obviously, but, you know, by a decent margin. But then it got to the House and things just completely fell apart. And, you know, I was there and so was Brian Murphy, our reporter, covering this when it was happening. And I mean, you know, some of the sponsors were just throwing out concessions left and right on floor amendments before the vote. Like, okay, you represent Greensboro and you're going to vote for it. How about we'll give this school more money in the bill? I mean, it was just, you know. And then even despite all that, it ended up failing by one vote. And this time it's back and it seems to have really solidified support. at the legislature from what I've seen. Lawmakers on both the left and the right, because this is one of those bills that has both bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition. But this year it does seem to have significantly more support than it did last time around.
Yeah, and it cleared the committees. We expect, I guess, the House to vote on this presumably next week. Fiscal note came out on the bill. $3 million will be the tax revenue from this in the first 6 months because the operators are going to be able to deduct all sorts of bonuses and promotional credits, like the thing where they're like, oh, we'll give you $1,000 to place your first bet. That'll be deductible. So if you ever wondered how do they afford to do that? Well, it's because it's subsidized by not having to pay taxes on it. That revenue climbs, according to the fiscal note, in subsequent years to $42.6 million. That's for 2027-28. That would be below the $49.8 million Virginia got from sports wagering in tax revenue in 2022, which was its second year as opposed to further down the line for us. That's all from some reporting by Brian Murphy, the aforementioned Murph. Blue Cross Blue Shield. This is a bill I want to highlight because it's like a big business fight that may not get a lot of pub. It'll get some.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a big deal. There's a bill the Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina wants, kind of a loosening of regulatory changes, says they will make it will make them more competitive with other large insurers out of state. The state insurance commissioner, though, Mike Causey, says not so fast.
Well, and he has some experience with businesses trying to fight for regulatory changes, doesn't he, Travis?
Yeah, he said some of this is a la Greg Lindbergh, you know, reminiscent of what Greg Lindbergh, who is under at least two federal indictments right now, wanted to do that would allow him to invest more of the insurance premiums that come in every month. Insurance is a cash-rich business because people pay premiums every month. Invest in his own companies. Blue Cross Blue Shield says no, the bill doesn't do that at all. I ain't going to sit here and tell you that I know exactly what this bill does. It's complicated. Sponsor John Bradford in the House says the bill is going to morph. So we'll just kind of let that percolate and see what happens. But it's going to be one of several kind of big business fights. And I'll put the building codes issues that you're about to talk about into that same pot. This is like an industry is seeking significant change.
Yes, and you know, this is something that's kind of been a trend the last few years. So I don't think this should surprise anybody, but the construction, the development industry really wants a rollback of regulations. And that means zoning rules. That means, you know, how inspections get done. And there were three different bills kind of along these lines that moved forward in committee this past week that I covered. Basically, all of them are aimed at speeding up construction of houses. You know, the sponsor, Jeff Zinger, who is himself a developer in Forsyth County, said that, you know, things are going so slow right now that especially because of inflation, you know, you'll start a project and then just wait and wait and wait and wait to get approval from the city or the county. And then, you know, months go by. And by the time you actually get your approval, oh, what do you know? You know, material prices have skyrocketed and suddenly your investors don't really want to pay for this project anymore. And so then, you know, everything just sits empty.
Senator, it seemed like the people who were against the bills, because there are people against these bills, acknowledged some of these issues. So we got to do something.
Yes. Right? It's one of those things everyone agrees. Okay. I mean, housing prices have skyrocketed. We've got to do something to fix it. You know, increasing the supply of houses should, in theory, you know, if anyone's taken economics in college, fix that issue. It's a simple supply and demand kind of thing. But the city governments and the county commissioners, their lobbying groups for, you know, all of them across the state aren't totally sold on this. They're down with some of the changes, but some others would take some power away from them. And they say it could lead to unintended consequences. Plus, you know,
like a house falling down.
But yeah, you know, you don't want to sacrifice, you know, safety for speed. Even though you do want to prioritize speed, you got to find that balance.
Right, right. So that's one we're going to continue to watch. It's kind of a package of bills. Bill to ban vaccine mandates, House Bill 98, cleared House Health today. That was on Tuesday. But it's not the bill it used to be. I mean, basically now it just says that state entities, local governments, schools can't require employees or students to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Doesn't affect any other vaccines. Once this bill said schools could not require students to wear masks, that language is out, so schools can still do that. UNC Hospitals was carved out. It's a state entity, but they would still be allowed to make their employees take the vaccine. I think we've got peace in the valley for the most part on that one. A lot of Democrats are still against it, but it seems to have been negotiated down.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Republicans have agreed to make some of these changes that you've mentioned shows, I would think, that they're hoping that this bill can actually pass and doesn't have to just exist as, you know, purely a messaging bill, but, you know, could actually become law.
I think it probably will. The Cooper administration has worked with them on that. Tell us about the opaque transparency bill, as I've described it in my notes, because I just think that's funny.
Yeah, so we had a pro-transparency bill that got debated in committee the other day in just about the least transparent way possible. You know, as people who've been around the building know, oftentimes, you know, PCS, an amendment, gets suggested to things at the last minute. Well, that's what happened here. And, you know, the public couldn't see this new PCS of the bill while it was being debated, before it was being debated. Even some of the members on the committee said they only got it a couple minutes beforehand. One of them clearly was reading the old version of the bill, asking questions because she kept using like the wrong section numbers when she was referring to stuff. So she clearly didn't even have the, you know, the new updated version. And it was just kind of one of those head scratching moments when you say, are we really all about transparency here? If you know, the public can't look at what we're doing and even the state lawmakers don't necessarily know what they're voting on.
And the bill moved forward without it being clear in the room that everyone understood it, right? Is that fair? A fair characterization on
that,
my part?
Yes. Any time that members of the committee had questions about, like, hey, what does this bill actually do? Those questions weren't really answered by the bill's sponsors or legislative staff. Instead, they kind of just kicked it all to the liaison for State Treasurer Dale Falwell, whose office wrote the bill. And a big part of the bill is to kind of crack down at the Council of State, which is the group of executive elected officials, which Falwell sits on, which Governor Cooper sits on, Lieutenant Governor, AG.
Yeah, the 10 statewide elected officials in North Carolina state government.
Yeah, and this all dates back to the pandemic when Cooper used his emergency powers to do things like shut down businesses in the early days of COVID, which Republicans really opposed and said that they should have been allowed to vote on. But Cooper did it without them voting on it. This bill would change those rules moving forward. Say anytime the Council of State ever does anything, it's got to go up for a full vote, and the governor can't just do it himself.
Yeah, and a lot about of this is good because they've changed some of that power structure already.
Yeah, some of that already got changed. You're right.
And this is kind of about the meeting protocols and, you know, maybe we don't fully understand the bill because
that was a big question. Like, is this just cleaning up the language to, you know, kind of, you know, illustrate what the legislature already chose to do, or is this adding new things and making new changes? And no one could get that question answered.
We'll fix it in the Senate, Will. Don't worry about it. That one is H-205, by the way. I think it is only cleared committee, so it does have some more stops.
Yeah, we'll see.
Before it leaves the House. Quickly, on the appointments bill, that cleared the House unanimously. The only two things that I saw that I'll note were that Dr. Perrin Jones, a former House member from Greenville, will be appointed to the North Carolina Institute of Medicine. And Kathy Harrington, former State Senator Kathy Harrington, is replacing former State Senator Jerry Tillman on the State Board of Transportation. Senator Tillman passed away not too long ago. That appointments bill is House Bill 411, if you want to read it. House Bill 96 requires a little bit of history and civics in college. It cleared the House this week, 69-47, close to party lines. Shelley Willingham and Joe John were the two Democrats who voted for it. This one got kind of more controversial than maybe I was expecting.
Yeah, you know, I covered this one when it was in committee, and it didn't seem all that controversial. I'm not sure exactly when or why Democrats
came around
on it. I think it
picked up something in rules. It got some debate in rules.
So. Yeah. And, you know, on its face, you know, it seems good. You know, make people study civics. I think, you know, a lot of folks would say, yeah, you know, society might be better if people knew a little bit more about how government works, how history works. But there, you know, there are some concerns that Democrats had about this, which I think you listened to, Travis, when it was being debated, right?
Yeah, I mean, because it lays out some things that you have to read, and they actually added an amendment. So the North Carolina Constitution is one of those things now. But it's like the Constitution, several of the Federalist Papers, Martin Luther King's letters from a Birmingham jail, basically founding documents and some other writing.
The Declaration of Independence, the Emancipation Proclamation.
There you go. And Representative Amos Quick, in rules, and then again on the House floor, asked Representative Keith Kidwell, who was the bill's sponsor. And, I mean, look, Keith Kidwell is about as far right as you can get. Amos Quick is, I mean, he's a Democrat. I don't know how far left or right he is. But there's also a black-white situation here, too, because Quick is black, Kidwell is white. And Quick was basically saying, hey, there, Representative Kidwell, How'd you land on the letters from a Birmingham jail? What was it about that that made you want to include this? And so there was a little bit of a, I wouldn't call it necessarily tense back and forth, but it was clear that Democrats were kind of pushing back on this idea of the Republican Party picking and choosing which historical documents got to be read. Lindsay Prather, who I believe is from Buncombe County, a first-term House member, she stood up, gave a speech. She said, hey, none of these documents are written by women. Only one of them is written by a black person. Only one of them was written in the last 160 years. And the idea being that maybe this is not the best way and the best place to pick the foundational documents that we use to teach children about, or not children, you know, college kids, about American life. So I don't know. That one generated more debate than I expected. And the embalming fluid bill? More debate than I expected. That's the one where apparently some people are putting PCP and fentanyl into embalming fluid, and then
that was a new one to me.
At one point, Representative Fontenot, who is the Wilson County representative and the sponsor on this bill, he said that embalming fluid gives you superhuman strength. Do you think that's right? Does that sound right?
Well, I mean, given who embalming fluid is technically usually given to, I would certainly hope not.
Yeah, and it comes out of a tragic story. Apparently, a young man was high on this stuff. And if I'm remembering correctly, and forgive me if I'm not, because it is a terrible story, I believe his mother had to kill him because of the way he was behaving on this stuff. So the idea is to make it illegal to sell it in this manner. But I mean, during the debate on the House floor, Democrats were saying, I don't know that we've thought this out all the way. Apparently, you can buy it on Amazon. Like, people were Googling it on the House floor. So it passed 88-27. So after quite a bit of debate, actually passed bipartisan support, a strong vote margin, goes over to the Senate. I'm guessing the Senate, though, takes a look at this and slows the train down a little bit. That's a very Senate thing to do.
Yeah, you could say that with most bills, I think.
Yeah. Quick hits. Also this week, a bill passed the House that will add, if you want it, and you qualify, a designation that I guess it indicates the driver is on the autism scale. And the idea being you hand your license to the officer. The officer looks at it and sees it and then maybe understands a little bit better why you're behaving this way or that way because you have autism. Interesting measure.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen so many videos of police officers shooting people during traffic stops, and I think this is just aimed at, you know, hey, if we can just take that down a notch, even just a little bit, by letting the cop know, hey, you know, yeah, this person might be reacting weirdly, but
it's not suspicious necessarily. Yeah, 111-0. April 22nd, Mark Robinson will hold an event at Ace Speedway, making some announcement. Will, do you have any idea what he's going to announce, the lieutenant governor?
Maybe just his shopping list, or maybe a run for governor.
You think?
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. There's no way to know. Speaking of politics, Judge Allison Riggs, who many will remember as a civil rights attorney, voting attorney for years and years and years, who the governor appointed to the Court of Appeals, right?
Correct. Right. Yep.
She is up for re-election in 2024, or for election in 2024 to the Court of Appeals. And I saw my first campaign donation email. I don't know how I got on that list. I'm on everybody's dang list, I think. But so that went out. So, hey, it's 2024. Gary Robertson, our colleague at the Associated Press, pointed out to me that she also recently issued her first opinion from the Court of Appeals.
I guess if you're going to run for re-election as a judge, you should at least write one opinion before you start asking people to fund your next campaign.
Maybe that's a rule. There's a new caucus, the NC Young Republican Legislators Caucus. You have to be under 41 years of age. Jake Johnson, the youngest member in the North Carolina General Assembly, is the chairman. David Craven is in it from the Senate. I saw five members listed. Charles, is it Dingy? Dingy?
That's a good question.
I should have looked this up before we went on the air there, folks. But Charles, D-I-N-G-E-E, has announced a run for state auditor. He is a former chairman of the Wake County Young Republicans. According to his website, he started in banking. He is now a small business owner. I'll also mention quickly, Colin Campbell reported Charlotte Libertarian Mike Ross running for governor. So we got a Libertarian candidate for governor.
All right. We'll be on the lookout for how that campaign goes.
You think Mark Robinson will get into that race?
We'll have to wait till this Ace Speedway event to find out.
Man, if only there was some way to speculate on that. Next week, I think we mentioned that the budget is going to be released on Wednesday.
Yep, party time for all the
party
fiscal.
Time for Don Vaughn and no one else, right? We love you, Don. Appropriations meetings the next day, so kind of a marathon of meetings to go over the next day. The House is planning floor votes, not on the budget, but on other bills, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. Tuesday session starts at 3 p.m. I don't know what time the Senate is getting going next week, Will. I don't know if you...
The Senate's always late anyways.
The Senate will move in due time. President Joe Biden going to be in Durham Tuesday. In fact, we got a bunch of federal people coming. I was told that Michael Regan, the environmental, the head of the EPA, will be in North Carolina Wednesday. And then Pete Buttigieg, the Department of Transportation head, that he'll be here next week. I think he's coming to the Charlotte area. But Joe Biden, the president, in Durham on Tuesday. I think they're all going to talk about infrastructure. There's so much federal infrastructure money right now.
Yeah, billions of dollars for everything, you know, bridges, clean water, you name it. And they want to brag about that.
Yeah, and I you can kind of get used to that because we're a swing state. And as one insider pointed out to me, a short flight from Washington, D.C. So
there you go.
I think that's all I've got for the good of the order. You got anything next?
Nope, let's wrap it up.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really do appreciate you. Thank you to Laura Leslie, who I hope is not using her weekend to listen to this, but we'll see her back next week on The Wrap.
Professionals, it's time to supercharge your career at William Peace University's School of Professional Studies, the smart solution for working adults who want to earn a college degree. Our School for Professional Studies helps you balance work, family, and personal goals with affordable, flexible degree programs. Online, flexible, affordable. Attend classes when it fits your schedule. WPU offers various start dates, so why wait? Take control of your education. Your future is waiting. Explore our programs at williampeace.info/SPS. William Peace University, where your success takes center stage.